This is Laura Deirdre with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Peg Burnett, Senior Vice President, CFO, and Treasurer at Stormont Vail Health. Peg, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, I know we've got a lot to talk about. There's so much happening in the healthcare space right now and a lot of interesting developments. But before we dive into my questions, can you tell me a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I've been here at Stormont for coming up on a year and a half now, so not very long. Prior to this, though, I was in Denver at Denver Health Medical Center, which is a large public safety net hospital. I was there for about 25 years with most of that as their CFO. And then I retired, quote unquote, from Denver Health in 2020 and then decided to come here to Stormont when they had a good opportunity just last year. And I grew up in Topeka, so this was home to me. Went to Topeka High School and KU, and so I'm happy to be back here. So I've got about 30 years or so in healthcare finance leadership and have served in mostly a CFO position during that time.
Absolutely. Wow, that's great to hear. So after being in this role back in your hometown after a year, what have been some of the things that you're most proud of?
Well, I think that I'm really proud of kind of looking over the whole of my career of the accomplishments, both at Denver Health and at Stormont during various kind of quote-unquote crisis points in time in healthcare. And the most obvious example of that is the pandemic and still feeling effects of the pandemic and especially feeling the post-effects of the pandemic that maybe we never realized would happen, like the beginning of some of the workforce shortages that were already going on, but the pandemic kind of made those a lot more acute. But just getting through it and on a daily basis, innovating to make it so that we could deliver care to the patients who need it the most was very rewarding. And as a finance person, looking back on it, I'm not sure it was the most, it was exciting, but it was not the most happy thing to do, but being able to continue to pay the bills and make ends meet and balance the budget during that time, because I was at Denver Health during the pandemic and I also was at Stormont during some of the recent surges. And so working on that for both places has been very heartening and rewarding. So definitely proud of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine just there's, you know, so much has happened over the last 2 years and making it through the pandemic is really a huge accomplishment. Now, thinking about where we're at today, hopefully in a spot where we're looking ahead a little bit more, what are some of the issues that you're spending most of your time on right now?
Yeah, so I think all of healthcare is struggling right now. And I track a report called Kaufman-Hall Flash Report, which kind of shows for the nation how organizations are doing, healthcare organizations. And the margins have been the lowest in 2022 of any year in the pandemic. And on the average, there are losses of about, you know, up to like 4%. And so it's a struggle financially. And what we're faced with are a lot of different convening factors. We've got inpatient care trending down. And these trends really were already starting before the pandemic, but I do think the pandemic sped them up. But the inpatient care declining, it was already on the decline. Some of it's an intentional decline. We've all been working for years to try to find alternatives to inpatient care that are less expensive and make sure that the, you know, the people that didn't need to be in the hospital were not in the hospital, but that has really accelerated. So declining inpatient services, which are still highest margin, and then that's coupled with a workforce shortage. So for the inpatients that we are taking care of and really across the spectrum, the staff have retired or moved on, or there have been a lot of competition for nurses and other care providers who in the past would have been on staff in the hospital and now have elected to travel and be traveling nurses and go kind of anywhere in the U.S. that they want to go to. And I know people who follow Becker's know about all these trends because Becker's does a great job of putting out the news. But, you know, that's all to say what I've been working on and spending time on is our strategic planning and budgeting process for 2023 and beyond. We're on a September 30 fiscal year, so we have to have our budget ready. It's right around the corner to start October 1st. And so we have worked on our strategic plan through the summer months and then translating that into a budget that will be applicable to 2023, but also looking beyond 2023 and doing planning of how do we get back to acceptable performance financially and operationally. So I've been spending a lot of my time on that recently, and there are a lot of component parts to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's fascinating to hear. And I definitely remember seeing the key points from that Kaufman Hall report that you're talking about, and something that hospital executives and health system executives across the board really are struggling with a lot of the things, as you mentioned, in trying to figure out how to reconcile all of those things, make sure that, you know, as costs rise, that they're not putting themselves in too tough of a financial situation. So when you look at where you're headed strategically and how you're working on those strategic plans, I guess, how will the hospitals and health systems look different in the future so that they can accommodate for some of these trends that you're talking about in terms of less inpatient care, trying to manage an organization, you know, that maybe doesn't have the same type of workforce as it did in the past or the same volume of employees? What do you see as really being some of the big things that you are planning for in the future?
Yeah, so what's going to be happening is, with the shrinking inpatient footprint, there's going to be more outpatient care, and there needs to be more focus on building on some of the new services that we started to do during the pandemic, like more telemedicine and virtual health. And so in addition to that, there's some challenges, especially in the rural communities, with hospitals who have traditionally served as an anchor for their community, being able to still exist and provide jobs to the community, provide services. And so, you know, with cost pressures, we've had to carefully prioritize our investments. We have deliberately prioritized in a few areas. One of those is shoring up workforce. And so we've tried to invest in things that make us a differentiator in terms of recruitment. And so one of those examples is we do have a childcare that Stormont operates. And we don't contract it out. It's actually run by Stormont personnel. If you look online, we've got 5-star ratings. It's one of the highest rated child cares in the area. And it's called Building Blocks. And so we're expanding Building Blocks. Right now we have it at one site. We're going to double our capacity and expand to 2 sites that are close to each other. We're going to separate the sites by age. And in that way, double our capacity, as I mentioned, because we tend to have a waiting list. We're offering that child care to our team members, our employees, and we also offer a pretty significant discount for services. And so that project, you know, takes some capital investment and also takes operational investment. And child cares usually operate on pretty thin margins, and because of the quality that we deliver and extra services, we tend to operate at a little bit of a loss, especially with the discounts. But it's a service that we recognize is important, can help with workforce. And so that's an example of one of the investments that we're making. It ties right into our strategic plan, which has a big workforce component. The second is, you know, I mentioned the rural hospitals in the community. So Stormont Vail Health has a long history of serving the Topeka, Kansas community, and has also evolved into serving the Northeast region in Kansas. And there are, if you're familiar with Kansas, there are very large rural components of Kansas. A lot of the population tends to be concentrated in Kansas City, Topeka, the far northeast area, and then south into Wichita. So we have expanded our footprint, and most recently we are constructing a nearly 80,000 square foot building, medical office building in Manhattan, Kansas, which is the home of K-State, and it's a growing community. It's about an hour away from Topeka. And that's going to be opening up in summer 2023. And so through that model, we're going to offer a lot more outpatient services. So we're, you know, investing in outpatient care there. Now, in addition to that, we are partnering with Gary Community Hospital, which is an inpatient facility, but with a small number of beds, about 50, but in a pretty populous area in Junction City, Kansas. Fort Riley Army Base is located there. And that hospital has been struggling a bit. And Stormont has a really strong skill set in operating hospital services. So the aim there is to, you know, operate inpatient services, expand the outpatient footprint, but help to keep the hospital open and serve the community. So that's another area that we're kind of strategically investing in. In addition to that, we're working on expanding other outpatient services that we have, kind of along the theme of, you know, the non-inpatient area. So we're remodeling our cancer center. It's a pretty big remodel. It will improve service to clients of the cancer center. And unfortunately, the demand for that service has grown such that we need to grow to meet the need. We're simply running out of space. And so that's another investment. And then, you know, in terms of what we call operational excellence, which is looking to save costs, be more efficient where we can, especially for our administrative areas, we're trying to move as many workers who are on the admin side, like billing and that kind of thing, to either hybrid or working remote, and then saving on office space and consolidating. And that might sound straightforward or easier than, you know, I guess that might sound easy, but especially for healthcare, which tends to move sometimes slower than other industries, it's a little bit difficult. People are used to having an office, used to operating in, being in the office, even though during the pandemic we were remote. The model tends to be in healthcare, need to be at the office. So that's one of the areas we're investing. We're investing in technology to really support people being in their homes, and then investing in remodel to make the space so that it's more of a touchdown or a team-based space, and then you do your individual work at home. So those are just some of the things going on. Circling back then to, you know, with the way things are trending with inpatient care going down, the idea is to become as cost-effective as possible, make sure that we have the workforce to take care of the patients, both on an in- and outpatient basis. And then for those people that are in the hospital, the other issue is making sure that they really need hospital care so that we're not paying for a bigger footprint than we need. And what I mean by that is we have, you know, people who need acute inpatient services. There's observation status where people should be in the hospital for that 2 days or less, 48 hours. And then there's long stay patients who, they don't come in as long stay patients, but when they are getting ready to be discharged, they lack a safe discharge. And like organizations nationally, Stormont Vail has challenges with that issue. And so working to see how can we best work on programs with partners and internally to serve all of those populations of patients so that those truly in the hospital are those who need the care. And when, you know, I'd like to expand on the long stay patients a little bit more when we get to the right point. But anyway, those are some of the things that we're working on in terms of investment and trying to prepare ourselves for the future.
Absolutely. Yeah, that, you know, it's fantastic to hear. And it's just really interesting to think about all the different moving parts that you have, mentioning, you know, some new projects, new building space, but then also reconfiguring, you know, the office space there and becoming more agile in terms of supporting people working from home and those kinds of things when they can. It's just really interesting to see that type of strategy. And then to, you know, looking at the different services that have become more necessary or at a higher demand now than they were in the past. So thank you so much for going through all those different strategies with us. Now, what are you most excited about right now?
Well, so I'm excited to really be able to resume being in an innovation and growth mode, whereas during the pandemic, we were, you know, we were innovating. We were definitely innovating as relates to just the basics of delivering care in the environment that we were in. But some of the things that we were working on prior to the pandemic hitting that were really exciting had to slow down. So I am excited to be back to the innovation mode. And one of the things I wanted to expand on a little bit from what I commented on earlier is, you know, addressing the needs of people who need to be at a level of care other than the hospital. And so, for example, I looked at our numbers today, and 269 of our beds are filled with inpatients. In addition to that, we have about 40 patients in-house who are not, so 40. So, you know, that makes just over 300. And so the ones who are not inpatient are either in observation status or they're long-term, they're staying longer than they should be staying because we can't find placement for them. And so really, interestingly, the observation people, The idea is patients who need observation come in. We should be observing them for a period of time to determine if they need something further in the hospital, like an admission, or can be discharged or, you know, referred to outpatient services, that kind of thing. So we have, today we had 13 people in the hospital who had a stay that was observation over 48 hours, with the highest being 45 days. So if you think about that, the way that insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, and insurers look at observation is, should be a short stay, so the payment is low. And so we're getting perhaps about $3,000 for someone who stays in the hospital 45 days, and the cost per day for care at Thurmont, at least, and, you know, I think it's pretty typical nationally, is right around $3,000 a day. And so you have that, and then on the other end of that spectrum, we have people who came in, they did need to be in the hospital, and we treated their condition, but now they need long-term care, or their home is not safe, or they need a place to go. But one of the rules that we abide by under CMS, and, you know, and also it's the right thing to do, is we can't discharge someone if they don't have a safe discharge. So they're still in the hospital, incurring that cost per day, and we're not receiving any payment at this point. And so working on those challenges is one of our go-forward strategies. And when you look at, in order to be successful, hospitals are going to have to work together with partners like post-acute care and other partners, housing and such, to really come up with a solution for this, because the problem has landed on the hospital's doorstep, but it's a community issue, that there's not a safe place for someone to be discharged for various reasons when their when their acute condition has been taken care of. Now, Stormont's a nonprofit hospital, so we take all patients regardless of their ability to pay. We're in a relatively small community. Denver Health, where I worked at the public hospital, the long-stay patient record there was 1,546 days, so years that we couldn't find placement for someone. And so that's driving a cost for which there's no reimbursement, but ultimately the payment has to come from somewhere, so it's being incorporated into taxes and insurance premiums, and we're all paying for it. And so hospitals, the highest dollar, most expensive form of housing, and we really need to work on that. So I'm passionate about that part, and it's one of the things I'm most excited about getting to work on addressing.
Absolutely. That's fascinating to hear about. Peg, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. This has been such an interesting discussion, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Okay. Thank you very much.